Dedication. For every leader who has ever felt too tired to keep going, and chose rest, and then chose to rise again. For the organizers, the caretakers, the bridge builders, the truth tellers, for the ones who hold the line and the ones who quietly hold each other. For those who are fighting for a better world while learning how to live more gently in this one. This is for you. Acknowledgements. This book would not exist without the wisdom, courage, and resilience of the leaders we've had the honor to coach, collaborate with, and learn from. You are our inspiration, our teachers, and our evidence that joyful democracy is not only possible, it's already here. To our coaching community, who remind us that transformation happens in relationship. To our colleagues in advocacy and justice movements, who keep showing up with brilliance and heart. To our loved ones, who have held space for us to do this work with integrity and care, and to those whose names we may never know, but whose presence shapes the world for the better every day. Thank you for your labor, thank you for your joy, thank you for your leadership. For the reader. This book is not meant to be read once and put away. It's meant to be dog-eared and revisited, marked with your thoughts, your questions, your exhale of recognition, carried with you when the work feels heavy, or when you forget that you, too, deserve joy. It's a field guide for returning, to yourself, to your values, to the kind of leadership that sustains both you and the movements you serve. We hope you return to these pages again and again, but more importantly, we hope you return to yourself, with kindness, courage, and trust. You're not alone. You're not behind. You're right on time. About this book. This work should feel better. Joyful Democracy for the People Holding It All Together was written for those on the front lines of justice and advocacy, leaders who are exhausted, inspired, discouraged, and determined, often all at once. This book offers a coaching-based framework for navigating leadership in high-stakes, high-impact spaces. It's not a set of instructions. It's a set of invitations to pause, reflect, and lead differently. Whether you're an ACLU attorney, a nonprofit director, a grassroots organizer, or a mission-driven professional working in systems not built for your flourishing, this book was made to support you. How to use this book. Each chapter includes context and reflection on real-world leadership challenges. Practical tools and coaching prompts. Composite coaching stories. Small practices to build momentum and sustainability. This book can be used individually, with a coach, or in teams and peer learning circles. You don't have to read in order. Begin where your heart pulls you.
About the Joyful Democracy Coaching Initiative.
The Joyful Democracy Coaching Initiative exists to support purpose-driven changemakers, advocates, organizers, nonprofit leaders, attorneys, educators, and movement builders who are navigating the emotional, spiritual, and structural weight of justice work. We offer coaching, curriculum, and community to help leaders reconnect with purpose and presence, resist burnout and perfectionism, reclaim joy as a leadership strategy, build relational, sustainable, values-aligned cultures. This book is part of that commitment. To learn more, visit the Social Leadership Coach. Or reach out at joyfuldemocracy@thesocialleadershipcoach.com. Chapter 1, The Vision of Joyful Democracy. What if joy wasn't the reward, but the resistance itself? In a time when civil liberties are under siege, when truth feels negotiable, and when those fighting for justice are vilified, joy might seem like a luxury. But for purpose-driven leaders, joy is oxygen. It's what allows you to keep going, not just surviving, but leading, creating, and thriving. Joyful democracy is not naive. It's not a blind optimism that ignores pain or bypasses reality. It is a deeply grounded, intentional practice. A way of engaging in the democratic process that refuses to cede power to despair. A refusal to let those who aim to silence, exhaust, or intimidate you win. Joyful democracy is what happens when leaders reclaim their right to wholeness, even as they fight for others. What joyful democracy really means. We are taught to think of democracy in terms of systems, voting, branches of government, policies. But democracy lives in people, in relationships, movements, and the stories we tell ourselves about what's possible. Joyful democracy is built on 5 principles. Every voice matters. Not just in elections, but in every meeting, community, conversation, and conflict. Purpose fuels sustainability. When you know why you do this work, and connect it to joy, not just duty, you last longer and lead better. Healing is part of the fight. Trauma is real. Resilience isn't just personal, it's cultural, political, and structural. Joyful democracy demands space for grief, healing, and rest. Power must be shared. Joy isn't just personal, it is collective. It thrives when leaders build spaces where others feel seen, heard, and empowered. Belonging is the soil where joy grows. We can't experience joy if we don't feel safe, seen, or heard. That's why inclusive leadership is not optional, it's foundational. This is the democracy we defend, not one rooted in cynicism or survival mode, but one rooted in dignity, connection, and, yes, joy. Leading with joy is a radical act. As someone doing the work, whether you're an ACLU attorney, a reproductive rights advocate, an immigrant justice organizer, or a civil servant holding the line, you're likely running on fumes. You're navigating the heartbreak of systemic injustice, the fatigue of bureaucracy, and the backlash of regressive power structures. You might also be navigating the fear that your work could cost you your safety or reputation. The guilt of not doing enough, no matter how much you do. The exhaustion that comes from caring deeply in a world that tries not to. Joy can feel out of reach, or worse, indulgent. But here's the truth, you deserve to feel good doing good. Joy is not a byproduct of change, it's a catalyst for it. When we lead with joy, we model a different way of holding power. We create cultures of creativity, care, and trust. We stay more resilient, more creative, and more connected to what truly matters. We remind people that justice is not only necessary, it's beautiful. Joy is not a break from the work. It is the tone of the work when we reclaim our wholeness. Why coaching matters in joyful democracy? This book is grounded in a coaching approach, not because coaching is trendy, but because it centers agency, self-awareness, and transformation. In a time of intense uncertainty and pushback, coaching offers a rare space to pause, reflect, and realign. It's a place to remember who you are beneath the urgency. Coaching in the context of joyful democracy helps leaders reconnect with their own inner wisdom, interrupt burnout cycles before they become the norm, clarify values and align them with daily actions, cultivate the kind of leadership that is contagious and sustaining. Joyful democracy thrives when leaders see every conversation, every meeting, every moment of listening as an opportunity to uplift and empower. In this way, coaching becomes not just a professional tool, but a democratic practice, a way of leading that invites participation and shared power. Later in this book, you'll reflect on your own values and how they guide your leadership. For now, just know, joy isn't separate from your values, it's what happens when you live them out loud. A coaching reflection to close this chapter. What would change in your work if joy were non-negotiable? What would you stop doing, start doing, or do differently? Where have you felt a flicker of joy recently, however small? What would it look like to nurture it, even in this season? You don't have to give yourself away to lead powerfully. You don't have to trade your health, hope, or humanity to make a difference. Joyful democracy begins inside you, and it begins now. Chapter 2, Leading Without Breaking Down. There's a quiet myth running underneath many advocacy spaces, that to lead well, you must lead endlessly, that your worth is measured by how much you can carry, that if you're not running on empty, you're not doing enough. It's time to let that go. Joyful democracy requires sustainable leadership. Not self-sacrifice disguised as heroism. Not martyrdom passed off as purpose. But the kind of leadership rooted in clarity, care, and community. You can lead without breaking down, you can advocate fiercely and protect your well-being, you can fight for justice without abandoning yourself. The leadership we need now. The work of advocacy has never been easy, but in today's political climate, it's something else entirely. It's exhausting, high stakes, and often deeply personal. We need leaders who are not just effective, but self-aware, emotionally intelligent, and aligned with their purpose. We need leaders who know how to listen with presence, not just respond with talking points. Create space for multiple truths, not just their own perspective. Build structures of belonging, not just movements of urgency. Can name their limits, own their needs, and lead from wholeness. These aren't soft skills. They're survival skills for social change. They're how we lead in a way that lasts. Leadership as a values-based practice. In joyful democracy, leadership isn't about status, charisma, or control, it's about alignment. You lead best when your actions, boundaries, and strategies align with your values. That kind of alignment creates trust. It communicates clarity. It allows the people around you to feel safe, included, and inspired. Not sure what your core values are? That's okay. Most of us were never taught how to name them, let alone lead from them. Later in the book, you'll walk through a personal values reflection. But for now, ask yourself, what do I fight for when no one's watching? What do I refuse to trade, even under pressure? What principle feels sacred to me, something I won't bend for convenience? That's your compass. Leadership without values is performance. Leadership with values is power. The role of emotional intelligence. You can't fight for people if you've lost your ability to feel. You can't build coalitions if you don't know how to listen. You can't make good decisions if you're completely disconnected from yourself. Emotional intelligence, your ability to recognize, understand, and regulate emotions, isn't a luxury. It's what makes sustainable leadership possible. It helps you notice burnout before you collapse. Stay present during hard conversations. Make decisions grounded in your values, not your reactivity. Hold complexity without shutting down. In coaching, this is often where the real growth happens, not just learning new strategies, but developing the self-awareness to show up with presence and discernment in high-stakes spaces. When leaders build their emotional intelligence, they create cultures of trust. They model emotional maturity. They give permission for others to show up fully, not perfectly, but honestly. That kind of leadership ripples outward. It shapes how communities respond, how movements grow, and how democracy itself is lived. Leading from the inside out. The truth is, we replicate what we haven't healed. If we've learned to silence ourselves, we may silence others. If we lead from urgency, we may create more urgency. If we ignore our own boundaries, we may disrespect someone else's. Leading from the inside out means doing the inner work so that your outer impact reflects the world you're trying to build. It means unlearning patterns of overwork, perfectionism, and overfunctioning. Practicing discernment instead of people-pleasing. Making space for reflection, stillness, and support. It also means trusting that who you are is part of your strategy, not a distraction from it. When you believe in your own worth and contribution, you create space for others to believe in theirs. That's the ripple effect of authentic leadership. From extraction to sustainability. Many leaders in justice spaces are operating from extraction models of time, energy, talent. Not because they want to exploit themselves or others, but because that's the water we're swimming in. It takes intention to lead differently. To create a culture where rest is expected, not earned. Boundaries are honored, not resented. People are treated as whole humans, not instruments for output. Sustainable leadership isn't rigid, it's responsive. Leaders who center joy and wellness are often the most adaptable and creative, because they're not stuck in survival mode. That's joyful democracy in action. It's not just about policy, it's about practice. How we work together matters just as much as what we work toward. A coaching reflection to close this chapter. Where in your leadership have you been overextending, overcompensating, or overfunctioning? What value would you need to return to in order to lead more sustainably? What would it look like to lead from the inside out, not all at once, but one choice at a time? You don't need to be everything to everyone. You don't need to burn out to be worthy. You don't need to choose between leading and living. Joyful democracy starts with you, leading in alignment, in integrity, and in joy. Chapter 3, Coaching for Changemakers. You hold a lot, decisions that affect lives, conflicts that feel personal, grief that has nowhere to land, hope that feels both urgent and impossible. And still, the question repeats, who's holding you? Why coaching belongs in social justice work. In movements and mission-driven work, coaching can feel like an afterthought, or worse, a luxury. But here's what we've learned: the leaders doing the most high-stakes work are often the ones most in need of support. Coaching isn't a reward for burnout, it's the resistance to it. It's not about fixing people or offering advice. It's about creating space to think clearly, feel fully, and move forward with intention. At its best, coaching gives changemakers a safe, non-judgmental container to reconnect with their own wisdom. Step out of constant urgency and reflect. Get honest about what's working and what's not. Name the deeper fears, patterns, or stories that shape their leadership. That clarity is powerful, that pause is revolutionary, that support is necessary. What coaching is, and what it isn't. Let's be clear about what coaching isn't. It's not therapy, though it may be therapeutic, it's not consulting, though it may lead to new strategies, it's not advice giving or mentoring, though deep insights often emerge. Coaching is a partnership. A confidential, courageous space where you bring your full self, not just your role, and explore what's possible. You're not handed solutions. You're empowered to discover your own. In joyful democracy, coaching becomes a tool for liberation, not from the work, but from the internalized expectations and patterns that keep us stuck in cycles of depletion and disconnection. Coaching is a democratic practice. Coaching aligns beautifully with the core values of joyful democracy. It centers voice. Your voice. Your experience. Your intuition. It honors agency. You decide what matters and what to work on. It fosters inclusion. The coaching relationship is rooted in deep listening, curiosity, and non-judgment. It cultivates trust. Coaching builds the muscles for authenticity and reflection that ripple out into your leadership. In fact, coaching itself can be a form of microdemocracy. Each session is a space where you are not interrupted, minimized, or pushed to perform. You are heard. You are believed. You are held in your full complexity. The more self-aware and emotionally grounded you become through coaching, the more skillfully you can support, mentor, and empower those you lead. That's how coaching strengthens the movement, not just the individual. And when you experience that kind of presence, you are more likely to offer it to others. What coaching looks like in practice. In coaching, nothing is too small or too big to bring in. It's not just about strategy, it's about the inner shifts that change how you lead. You might work with a coach to set boundaries without guilt. Prepare for a difficult board meeting or public hearing. Explore why a certain team dynamic keeps repeating. Reconnect with your original mission after months or years of survival mode. Talk through a big career transition, identity shift, or moment of reckoning. Sometimes, coaching is the first time a leader says out loud, "I'm not okay." Or, "I'm proud of myself, and I never let myself say that." Or, "I think I need to let something go, but I don't know what yet." Composite coaching vignette: Ari, an environmental justice organizer, came to coaching after a painful campaign loss. They were drained, full of self-doubt, and unsure how to re-enter the work without resenting it. In coaching, Ari found space to grieve, reflect, and get curious. They named what they needed. They reconnected with their why. Coaching didn't give them a new job description, it gave them back their sense of self. And that changed everything. Coaching doesn't just help you see a problem more clearly, it helps you see yourself more clearly. The more you believe in your own voice, value, and vision, the more you invite others to believe in theirs. Building trust in the coaching relationship. For coaching to work, there has to be trust. You don't need a coach who agrees with you on everything, you need a coach who honors your dignity, listens deeply, and helps you reconnect with your own voice. A good coaching relationship feels Respectful, not performative. Curious, not directive. Spacious, not rushed. Focused, not forceful. In our experience, the most transformative coaching happens when you're willing to bring your full self. Your coach is committed to presence, not perfection. You both stay grounded in the why beneath the what. And as your trust in yourself deepens, so does your resilience. Coaching equips you not only to face challenges, but to meet them with a grounded, flexible mindset that sustains you for the long haul. Because coaching doesn't just help you survive the work, it helps you transform how you do the work. A coaching reflection to close this chapter. If you had 1 hour a month where you didn't have to prove anything, just reflect, feel, and be held, what would you talk about? What's been living in the background of your leadership that might deserve more space? Where in your life or work would it help to stop pushing through and start getting curious? You are not a machine. You're not a function. You're a person with a heart and history and vision. And in the work of defending joyful democracy, that humanity is not a liability, it's the source of your power. Chapter 4, Navigating Uncertainty and Resistance. The work of defending democracy doesn't come with a roadmap, and if you're honest, there are days it feels like you're walking in the dark, with a target on your back. You're not imagining it, the pushback is real. So is the self-doubt, the exhaustion, and the quiet question that comes in waves, is this really working? This chapter is your invitation to pause, not to pull back, but to recenter. To take stock. To name your truth. To remember that uncertainty isn't the enemy, and resistance isn't always a signal to stop. Start where you are. It's tempting to leap into strategy, but clarity doesn't come from forcing forward motion. It comes from reflection. Before you reset or reinvent, ask, where am I right now? Not just professionally, but personally. Emotionally. Spiritually. Energetically. Take inventory. What are you carrying that no one sees? What is quietly draining you? What still sparks something real in you? This is your current path, not what's on your resume or your calendar, but what's actually alive in you right now. And don't forget to assess your environment, too. What's shifting in your political, organizational, or cultural context? Where might there be new openings, or new risks, that influence your next step? Every changemaker's path is uniquely shaped by their gifts, their wounds, and their environment. Naming where you are isn't self-indulgent. It's strategic. It's the only way to take your next step with purpose. Resistance is part of the work. We often talk about resistance as something to overcome. But let's look more closely. Sometimes, resistance is external. Policy rollbacks. Reputational attacks. Institutional gaslighting. A culture that doesn't want to hear the truth. Sometimes, resistance is internal. Perfectionism. Fear of being seen. Guilt for stepping back. Grief that hasn't had time to be felt. Resistance doesn't mean you're off track, it might mean it's time for a new tactic, a new boundary, or a new support structure. When you name a barrier clearly, you can begin to respond to it intentionally. Uncertainty and resistance are not signs you're failing, they are signs that you are doing brave, consequential work, they are also signs that your nervous system and soul might need tending. Coaching helps you build the capacity to stay grounded in the presence of resistance. To ask, what's the signal here? Is this fear? Is this intuition? Is this fatigue? What am I learning about myself through this? That's how resistance becomes a teacher, not just an obstacle. Setting intentional, values-aligned goals. The antidote to chaos isn't control. It's clarity. Once you've taken inventory of where you are, the next step is asking, where do I want to go, and why? In joyful democracy, goals aren't just about productivity. They're about purpose. They're about alignment, not achievement for achievement's sake. To set intentional goals, consider, what matters most to you right now? What's the deeper why behind your current project or decision? What outcome would feel meaningful, not just measurable? Visualization can be a powerful part of goal setting. Try picturing the change you want to make, not just the outcome, but how it feels to move through the process with alignment. What does that version of you need to hear right now? And when you're clear on the big goal, break it into micro steps. Goals don't need to be grandiose to matter. They just need to be yours. Respond to 3 emails with boundaries intact might not change the world today, but it might protect the energy that allows you to keep showing up tomorrow. Cultivating mindsets that help you adapt. Uncertainty demands mindset shifts, not just action plans. Here are 4 coaching mindsets that help leaders navigate resistance with clarity. Brain growth over grit. You don't need to power through, you need to evolve. Ask, what is this challenge here to grow in me? Magnifying glass tilted left curiosity over certainty. Certainty is a comfort, not a requirement. Ask, what's another perspective I haven't considered yet? Memo: failure is data. Not everything will work. That doesn't mean you don't. Ask, what did I learn? What will I try next? Counterclockwise arrows button flexibility over perfection. There is no perfect message, movement, or meeting. Ask, what needs to be released so something better can emerge? One of the quiet gifts of coaching is the way it helps you move from spiraling into structuring, breaking down what feels overwhelming into steps that feel possible. Coaching creates the space for reflection, reframing, and noticing what's really at play, so your next move can come from clarity, not chaos. Brain sidebar, mindset shifts for uncertain times. Composite coaching vignette: Maya, an attorney leading voting rights litigation in a hostile state, came to coaching after months of relentless pressure. She was questioning her impact, losing sleep, and secretly considering stepping away from the work altogether. In coaching, she named the exhaustion she hadn't admitted to anyone. She explored the guilt of stepping back and the fear of being labeled as not tough enough. With her coach's help, Maya identified a core value she'd lost touch with: sustainability. She set one intention for the month ahead: to speak to herself with the same compassion she offers to her clients. That small shift opened the door to bigger ones. By the end of the season, she was leading her team differently, no less fierce, but far more grounded. A coaching reflection to close this chapter. Where are you right now, emotionally, spiritually, creatively? What's feeling murky, stuck, or tender? What one small goal could help you feel more grounded this week? What mindset would serve you better than the one you're holding now? You don't need to have all the answers, you don't need to push past your body's signals, you don't need to do this alone. You're allowed to slow down and get clear. That's not weakness. That's leadership. Chapter 5: Personal Sustainability for Public Impact. Let's name what many of us learned the hard way: you can't sustain a movement if you can't sustain yourself. And yet, how often are advocates, activists, and justice-driven leaders praised for working until they collapse? We're taught that self-sacrifice is noble. That rest is indulgent. That saying no is selfish. Here's what joyful democracy says instead: you matter. Your body matters. Your energy matters. Because the way we lead is the work. This chapter is about unlearning the extraction model of leadership. It's about building a life, and a movement, you can actually live inside. Burnout is not a badge of honor. Burnout isn't a personal failure. It's a systems-level consequence of relentless urgency, limited resources, moral injury, and overextension. And for those of us working in spaces where rights are actively being stripped away, burnout is a survival response. It means you've been giving everything you have for too long without enough support. Burnout looks like numbness when you used to feel rage. Dread at the thought of another Zoom or headline. Snapping at people you care about, then immediately regretting it. Losing sight of your why because you're so deep in the how. You can't outwork burnout. You have to rebuild differently. Wellness is a leadership skill. We don't usually see health listed in leadership development frameworks. But we should. Because wellness isn't just about green smoothies or spa days, it's about staying in the work without losing yourself. Wellness looks like recognizing when your body says not today, and listening. Eating, resting, and moving in ways that support your nervous system. naming and honoring your capacity. Refusing to model overwork is the standard for your team. You don't need to be fully healed to lead well, but you do need to be aware of how you're doing, and willing to shift when needed. The way we care for ourselves reflects the world we're trying to build. When wellness becomes a leadership value, it rewrites how we structure meetings, timelines, policies, even how we measure success. Prioritizing your own wellness doesn't just impact you, it models a new standard for your team and community. When leaders set the tone for rest, boundaries, and care, it gives others permission to do the same. Culture shifts one person at a time. Coaching can help you interrupt the burnout cycle. One of the most powerful functions of coaching is also the simplest, a place to pause. In coaching, you can finally say, "I'm exhausted, but I'm afraid to stop. I feel like I have to do it all myself. I don't even know what I need anymore." Coaching creates space for naming your stress patterns, exploring the narratives that fuel burnout, strategizing how to restore your energy without abandoning your purpose, reconnecting with joy, not as an escape, but as a power source. Often, burnout thrives in silence. Coaching breaks that silence and replaces it with curiosity, compassion, and accountability. Composite coaching. Vignette: Devon, a program director at a reproductive rights organization, came to coaching feeling completely drained. Their passion hadn't disappeared, but their ability to access it had. They were grinding through meetings, forgetting to eat, and missing the creative spark that once fueled their work. Through coaching, Devon named their fear that stepping back would let their team down. Together, they mapped out new boundaries and integrated recovery practices: morning walks without podcasts, a Friday no-meeting zone, and one daily joy ritual. Within 2 months, Devon wasn't just functioning, they were thriving again. Rest is a revolutionary act. Rest is not what you earn after you're done. It's what you need in order to keep going. And it's more than sleep, it's restoration. Quiet. Stillness. Nourishment. Space. If that feels hard to claim, ask yourself, who benefits when I keep pushing through pain? What systems taught me that depletion is a virtue? What would I need to believe to rest without guilt? Reclaiming rest is an act of resistance against systems that want us exhausted. Reclaiming rest is also an act of imagination. Because from that rest, we remember that we're more than what we produce. When you step away from the noise, even briefly, you reconnect with your purpose. Clarity often returns in the quiet. That's why sustainable practices don't just replenish your energy, they help you lead with sharper focus. Sustainable practices start small. You don't need a total life overhaul. You need small, repeatable choices that move you toward restoration. Here are a few. Block off 15 minutes of protected time in your calendar each day, with no agenda. Say "I'll get back to you" instead of defaulting to yes. Practice a 3-breath pause before responding to anything that spikes your adrenaline. Reflect on what joy actually feels like in your body, and where it's been missing. Pro tip: sustainable doesn't mean easy. Sometimes the hardest thing is saying, "I'm worth protecting." Brain sidebar: coaching questions for rebuilding from burnout. What warning signs have I been ignoring? What do I wish I could stop doing, but feel guilty about? What would self-respect look like in my calendar? Who models sustainable leadership for me, and what can I learn from them? If I gave myself permission to rest, what might I remember? A coaching reflection to close this chapter. Where am I currently operating from depletion? What story do I need to let go of in order to prioritize my health and energy? What's one daily or weekly rhythm that could support my sustainability as a leader? How would my leadership change if I believed that rested me is my most powerful self? You don't need to burn out to prove your worth, you don't need to trade your health to fight for justice, you don't need to choose between impact and well-being. Sustainable leadership is not a detour from the mission, it is the path forward. Sustainability isn't just a solo practice, it's collective lean into relationships that nourish you. Let others hold you when you're tired, you don't have to carry this alone to be effective. Chapter 6: Mindfulness and Inner Leadership. There's a kind of leadership that doesn't come from strategy. It doesn't come from charisma or credentials either. It comes from presence. When you're grounded, fully here, fully human, you lead differently. You listen better. You choose with clarity. You speak with courage. You respond instead of react. This is inner leadership. And mindfulness is what makes it possible. Why mindfulness belongs in movements. Mindfulness is not just a personal wellness tool, it's a public leadership practice. When leaders learn to pause, notice, and return to what matters, entire cultures shift. In justice work, it's easy to get swept up in urgency. But urgency without awareness leads to reactivity. That's how burnout happens. That's how harm gets replicated in movement spaces. That's how decisions get made from fear instead of values. Mindfulness helps you. Stay centered when the world around you is spinning. Hear what your body is trying to tell you. Respond to challenges with discernment, not defensiveness. Led from vision instead of reaction. And just like democracy, mindfulness is a practice, not a performance, not a state of perfection. It's about beginning again. And again. And again. The science and spirit of mindfulness. You don't need to sit cross-legged for an hour a day to access the benefits of mindfulness. Even small, consistent practices can lower your cortisol levels, improve your emotional regulation, help you stay present in difficult conversations, reduce anxiety, improve focus, and support sleep. But mindfulness also lives beyond the science. It's what allows you to reconnect with what's real in the moment. To pause in the middle of urgency. To soften when you'd normally armor up. It's the practice of coming home to yourself, so you can lead from wholeness. Mindfulness strengthens emotional intelligence, the ability to notice, name, and navigate emotions with care. And emotional intelligence is what allows you to stay connected to yourself and the people you lead, even under pressure. Composite coaching vignette: Elias, a community organizer working on housing justice, was feeling pulled in every direction. In coaching, they realized they were constantly reacting, jumping between crises, skipping meals, ignoring their body's signals. Their coach introduced a three-breath pause practice: stop, breathe, name what you're feeling. Elias started using it before tough conversations and at the start of every team meeting. Over time, this small act rewired the way they showed up, less frayed, more present, and surprisingly, more effective. Mindfulness practices for everyday leadership. You don't need to retreat to a mountain to cultivate mindfulness. You can do it on the way to a meeting, while washing dishes, or mid-scroll on your phone. Try these accessible practices. Cyclone 3-breath reset. Stop. Inhale slowly. Exhale slowly. Repeat twice. Notice what changes. Name it to ground it. Pause and say, right now I'm feeling underscore 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 dot. Naming emotions reduces their intensity and gives you space to respond. Hot beverage sensory anchoring. Pick one physical sensation: the warmth of your mug, your feet on the floor, the hum of background noise. Let it hold your attention for 30 seconds. Person in lotus position mini stillness break. Set a 2-minute timer. Do nothing. Watch your thoughts like clouds. No judgment. Just notice. Notebook mindful journaling. Ask, what's true for me right now? Don't edit. Just let it come. Mindfulness isn't one size fits all. Whether rooted in ancestral wisdom, spiritual practice, or secular habit, it's a way of listening inward that honors many paths. These aren't fixes, they're invitations to return to yourself. Brain sidebar: mindfulness is not. Stress is inevitable, reactivity is optional. High-stakes work brings pressure. That's not going to change. But what can change is how you relate to it. Mindfulness won't prevent hard things from happening. But it will help you respond with intention instead of reflex. Create space between a trigger and your reaction. Keep your leadership rooted in values, not urgency. Reduce the collateral damage of stress for you and those around you. This is why mindfulness is core to inner leadership. You can't control every situation, but you can choose how you meet it. From mindfulness to movement culture. When leaders cultivate presence, teams feel it. Imagine a workplace where people listen without interrupting. Meetings start with a grounding breath. Emotions are welcomed, not dismissed. Urgency doesn't override humanity. Try opening meetings with a mindful moment, or closing with one round of gratitude. These small rituals shift the energy of the room. Over time, they shift the culture. Mindfulness creates space for empathy, which strengthens our relationships, our teams, and our movements. The more present we are with ourselves, the more present we can be with others. That's not fluffy, that's culture change. Mindfulness isn't just personal. It's collective. And like any practice, it grows through repetition. Slowly, then all at once. A coaching reflection to close this chapter. Where in my life or leadership am I most reactive? What signals does my body give me when I'm stressed, and what helps me return? What daily task could become a mindfulness moment? What would change if I led with 10% more presence? You don't have to escape your life to find peace. You don't have to silence your thoughts to access wisdom. You don't have to master mindfulness to benefit from it. You just have to begin, come home to yourself, and let your leadership begin there. Chapter 7, Building Confidence, Courage, and Voice. If you've been told to speak up, but punished when you did, if you've been called too much or not enough depending on the room, if your leadership has been questioned, interrupted, or ignored, you're not alone. Confidence doesn't grow in isolation, it grows in community, it grows when we practice courage in small, real ways, again and again. This chapter is about reclaiming your voice. Not just so you can speak louder, but so you can speak from truth, not fear. Confidence isn't personality, it's practice. We're taught to believe that confidence is a trait, you either have it or you don't, but confidence is a skill, and like any skill, it gets stronger with use. Confidence is what happens when you know your values and act from them. You trust your own perspective, even if it's different. You try, learn, adapt, and try again. You honor your inner voice, even when others don't. The courage to speak comes from the practice of listening to yourself first. That's where authentic voice begins. What undermines confidence, and how to reclaim it? Confidence doesn't disappear because we're weak. It erodes when we're ignored in meetings. We're told we're not ready when we're clearly qualified. We're gaslit by institutions we serve. We feel like imposters in spaces we've earned our way into. Our confidence isn't created in a vacuum. It's shaped by systems, educational, cultural, political, and the stories we internalize from them. When we shift those stories, we begin to shift what we believe is possible. Over time, these moments compound, and without reflection, we start shrinking ourselves preemptively. But here's the truth: you don't have to be perfect to be powerful. You don't have to feel confident to take courageous action. Confidence often comes after the action, not before it. That's why small, regular acts of voice matter. Their reps, their reclamations. Composite coaching vignette: Salma, an attorney advocating for asylum seekers, struggled with public speaking. In coaching, she realized her anxiety wasn't about skill, it was about safety. Too many times, she'd been dismissed, condescended to, or penalized for taking up space. Her coach helped her build a practice of low-stakes voice, weekly journaling out loud, speaking first in one meeting per week, and writing herself a letter of self-recognition after each. These micro-corrections rewired her relationship with visibility. The power was always there. Coaching helped her reclaim it. Your voice is a leadership tool. Your voice is more than your words. It's your tone. Your presence. Your ability to name what others avoid. Your decision to ask a question instead of stay silent. In joyful democracy, voice isn't about dominance, it's about participation, and your voice matters in ways you may not realize. Naming injustice shifts the energy in the room. Telling your story makes space for others to tell theirs. Modeling honest reflection invites collective truth-telling. Asking what if opens a door no one saw before. You don't have to yell to be heard, but you do have to trust that what you're saying is worth sharing. Celebrating small wins builds confidence. Every time you honor your truth out loud, no matter the outcome, you grow trust in yourself. That's the real work, not waiting until you feel ready. But choosing to show up anyway. Try noticing. The moment you said no when it was hard. The moment you asked for help instead of powering through. The meeting where you stayed rooted instead of shrinking. The email you sent with a boundary instead of apology. Celebrate those moments. They count. They're not small. They're cumulative. They're revolutionary. Brain sidebar: confidence reframes for advocacy leaders. Coaching for confidence and courage. In coaching, leaders often arrive believing they lack confidence. But what they really lack is permission, permission to be imperfect, permission to speak with uncertainty, permission to trust their own authority. Coaching helps shift internalized scripts like, I can't mess this up. I need to prove I belong here. If I say it wrong, I'll ruin everything. And replaces them with, I'm here for a reason. I'm allowed to take up space. It's okay to speak from my evolving self. Mindfulness can help you notice judgment as it arises, and choose not to believe it. You can learn to observe the inner critic with compassion, then return to your core, your purpose, your voice, your presence. Confidence grows when we're not punished for being human. A coaching reflection to close this chapter. Where in my work or leadership do I hold back my voice? What old story is getting in the way of my confidence? What would it look like to take one small, courageous action this week? How would my community change if I believed my voice could open doors? You don't have to wait until you feel fearless, you don't have to pretend to be sure, you don't have to silence yourself to stay safe. Your voice matters, your courage is enough, and your leadership begins with the decision to show up as you are. Confidence is easier to sustain in community when others mirror your strength back to you. Your voice grows steadier. Surround yourself with those who honor your courage, not just your competence. Chapter 8: Strength and Solidarity, Leading in Community. You weren't meant to hold this alone, not the advocacy, not the grief, not the hope. Still, so many leaders, especially those navigating injustice, end up feeling isolated. They're praised for resilience while quietly overwhelmed. Expected to be both visionary and unshakable. Relational and endlessly available. But joyful democracy isn't a solo pursuit. It's a collective one. And strong leadership isn't about holding more, it's about creating spaces where others rise with you. This chapter is about building those spaces and reclaiming community as part of your power. Why we need each other. Movements are made of people, not heroes, and leadership, at its best, is distributed. Still, many of us were taught to lead by pushing through, not reaching out. Protect others' needs but ignore our own. Compete for visibility or credit instead of building alliances. Trust ourselves, but not each other. But real change happens in connection. In trust. In shared risk and shared resilience. Community also reminds us who we are, especially when dominant systems try to make us forget. Being in spaces where your values, lived experiences, and voice are reflected can reduce isolation and reconnect you with your purpose. You don't need to know everything. You just need to be willing to grow together. No one is coming to rescue us. But no one said we had to do it alone. Collaboration as a leadership practice. Collaboration isn't about consensus or codependence, it's about co-creation. True collaboration asks us to lead without dominating, listen without defensiveness, make space without shrinking, disagree without disrespect. And it asks us to recognize that our role in a movement isn't to do everything, it's to do our part well, while allowing others to do theirs. Strong collaborators are grounded in their own values, clear about their boundaries, and curious about other people's genius. Empowering others doesn't diminish your leadership, it expands it. When you trust people with real responsibility, offer mentorship, and celebrate their strengths, you build a culture where leadership is shared, not hoarded. That's not weakness. That's relational power. Composite coaching vignette. Marcos, a longtime immigrant rights advocate, came to coaching not because he felt uncertain, but because he felt alone. The more senior he became, the more disconnected he felt from peers. He was mentoring others but didn't have a space to be vulnerable himself. In coaching, Marcos named the pressure to have it all together and how that was keeping him from building authentic relationships. He started experimenting with collaborative leadership, not just delegating, but inviting shared visioning. The result wasn't just better outcomes. It was a sense of belonging he hadn't realized he was missing. Fostering inclusive spaces. Leadership isn't just about who speaks, it's about who feels safe enough to speak. Fostering inclusion requires more than intention. It takes attention. Who gets interrupted most? Who isn't invited to the table? Who is navigating invisible labor behind the scenes? Creating inclusive spaces means practicing active listening, encouraging a diversity of perspectives, naming power dynamics and rebalancing them, making feedback safe, and not just for the most confident. Inclusion isn't about being nice. It's about being just, it's about creating the conditions where everyone gets to bring their full voice, not just their most palatable parts. Boundaries make community possible. Solidarity doesn't mean endless availability. You can care deeply and still say, I don't have capacity right now. I trust you to lead this without me. I'm stepping back to protect my energy. Boundaries aren't barriers to connection. They're the conditions that make real connection possible. Sometimes the most powerful move is to step back and let others lead. Leadership isn't always about being visible. It's about knowing when your presence supports growth, and when your absence creates space for it. When you're honest about your limits, you build trust, not resentment. When you model sustainability, you help your community do the same. Boundaries don't separate us. They strengthen the web between us. Brain sidebar, building stronger circles of support. Ask yourself, who energizes me, and who drains me? Where do I feel safe asking for help? Who reflects my power back to me? Where do I still feel like I have to earn belonging? You deserve relationships where you don't have to earn your place. Coaching for collective leadership. Coaching is often focused on the individual, but the ripple effects are relational. Through coaching, you can reflect on the kind of team culture you're creating. Name what you need in collaboration, and what you don't. Explore how power, race, identity, and equity shape your leadership. Learn to celebrate others without minimizing yourself. Practice both humility and agency in shared decision-making. Effective leaders know when to lead from the front and when to step aside to let others rise. You don't have to choose between being strong and being supported. In fact, the strongest leaders are often the most well-held. A coaching reflection to close this chapter. Where am I doing too much alone, and why? What relationships feel life-giving right now? What boundaries would protect my ability to stay present in community? What would become possible if I trusted that I didn't have to lead alone? You were never meant to carry the whole thing by yourself. You're allowed to lean. You're allowed to be held. You're allowed to lead with others, not just for them. That's not stepping back. That's leading in alignment with how movements actually thrive. Chapter 9, Sustaining Momentum in Advocacy. You've done the work. To ground yourself. To reclaim your voice. To build trust in community. To shift how you show up. But what happens when the adrenaline fades? What happens after the policy win or loss? What happens when energy dips, setbacks come, or urgency returns like a familiar storm? That's where sustainability becomes more than self-care. IT becomes strategy. This chapter is about sustaining your impact in a way that honors your capacity, your values, and the long arc of the work. Momentum is not equal to constant motion. Let's challenge a myth that to keep going means to keep moving fast. In reality, sustainable momentum looks like pausing to assess what's working, integrating lessons before sprinting again. Letting the team lead while you recover. Saying no when it protects your energy for the next yes. Movements grow in cycles. So do people. The goal isn't non-stop motion, it's steady renewal. Building rhythms instead of routines. Routines can feel rigid. Rhythms are responsive. They help you stay connected to your energy, your mission, and the world around you without burning out. Try asking yourself, what energizes me consistently? What drains me more than it used to? What season of work am I in right now? Creation, maintenance, recovery, or renewal? Leadership isn't about always being on. It's about knowing how to move with intention and when to pause with purpose. Reframing setbacks as part of the process. You will hit resistance, you will feel disappointed, you will mess something up or fall short. That doesn't mean you're off track. It means you're human, and the work is real. Coaching helps you reframe. Failure as data. Criticism as perspective, not prophecy. Setbacks as signals to reassess, not abandon. The question isn't, did it go perfectly? It's, what did I learn? What will I carry forward? Composite coaching vignette. Jules, a reproductive justice leader, had just wrapped up a massive organizing campaign. The outcome had been powerful, but they felt oddly hollow. Coaching helped them name what was missing, integration. Together, they reflected on what the campaign taught them, how they'd grown, and what they wanted to do differently next time. That pause gave Jules not just rest, but direction. Momentum didn't come from the next win. It came from meaning. Creating systems that support you. Sustainability isn't about willpower. It's about infrastructure. Ask yourself, what systems support me when I don't have energy to think clearly? How does my calendar reflect what matters most? Who knows how to support me, because I've actually told them? Create tools, rhythms, and rituals that help you return to yourself. Monday check-ins with your body, not just your inbox. Monthly pauses to reset goals, not just chase deadlines. Shared calendars that honor everyone's time and energy, not just output. Sustainable leadership is built on scaffolding, not strain. Brain sidebar, signs you're shifting into sustainable momentum. You're creating space to think, not just react. You're sharing power without over-explaining. You're moving through discomfort without abandoning yourself. You're checking in with purpose more than productivity. You're planning for recovery, not just execution. Coaching to sustain the long game. In long-term advocacy work, coaching helps you catch depletion patterns early. Celebrate milestones you'd otherwise ignore. Anchor your work in purpose, not performance. Make shifts with intention, not panic. Stay accountable to your values, not external pressure. You don't need to run faster. You need to run wiser. Coaching helps you pace for the long arc, not just the next meeting. A coaching reflection to close this chapter. What does momentum mean to me, really? Where am I moving out of habit instead of intention? What rhythms would help me recover and refocus? What do I want to sustain, and what can I release? You don't need to prove your passion by burning out. You don't need to keep pushing just because you're used to it. You don't need to stay in motion to stay in the movement. You are allowed to rest, you are allowed to reflect, and you are allowed to lead with intention, not just endurance. That's what keeps the work alive. That's what keeps you alive in the work. Chapter 10, Joyful Democracy in Action. This work is not easy, you already knew that, but now, you also know this. You can lead without breaking down, you can work without burning out, you can live your purpose with joy, not as an afterthought, but as your fuel. Joyful democracy isn't a fantasy or a luxury, it's a practice. A mindset. A way of being. And now, it's yours to carry forward. You've done something revolutionary, especially in this world. You've paused. Reflected, reclaimed space for your own becoming. That's not just personal growth. That's political resistance. What joyful democracy looks like in real life. It looks like a community organizer choosing rest instead of guilt, a nonprofit director modeling healthy boundaries, a teacher refusing to internalize systemic failure, a lawyer grounding themselves before a high-stakes hearing, a leader asking for help and receiving it without apology. It looks like small, consistent acts of presence, purpose, and permission. Permission to trust your values. Permission to say no with love. Permission to lead from humanity, not hustle. This is the quiet revolution. This is how we shift what leadership looks and feels like from the inside out. You're not waiting for joy. You're creating it. Joy is not the reward at the end of a long fight. It's the heartbeat that helps you keep showing up. It can live in your morning ritual before you log on. The moment of laughter in a hard meeting. The steady breath before you hit send. The shared glance with someone who gets it. In systems not built for your flourishing, joy becomes an act of resistance. Every time you honor your aliveness, you chip away at cultures of domination and depletion. Joy says, you belong here. You're allowed to feel good doing good. And when you lead from that place, you don't just protect your energy, you amplify it. You extend it. You offer it. Joy becomes collective. Legacy isn't what you leave, it's what you build now. You may never know all the lives you impact, the quiet ripple effects of your courage, the person you inspired simply by staying rooted. But legacy isn't about being remembered, it's about living aligned, right now. In Joyful Democracy, legacy is a team that trusts each other more because you made space. A policy shaped by clarity and compassion, not just pressure. A room where more people feel safe to speak. A choice made from healing instead of harm. That's real change. That's leadership you can live with. You get to keep practicing. You don't have to get this perfect, you don't have to hold it all at once, you don't have to remember everything this book offered. You just have to keep returning, to presence, to values, to yourself. There will be seasons when you forget your purpose, when urgency pulls you off center. That's not failure, it's part of the cycle. What matters is that you remember how to return. To your body. Your values. Your voice. That's the work. That's the practice. That's the point. Come back, reground, begin again. Coaching reflection, closing integration. What am I reclaiming for myself as a leader? What will I stop doing, and why? What part of this journey surprised me the most? What one intention do I want to carry forward into the next season of my work? A final word from us to you. You are doing sacred work, you are choosing to lead in ways that disrupt burnout culture, urgency addiction, and extractive leadership models. You are tending to your joy, not as a bonus, but as a birthright. You are already creating the future we need. If this journey supported you, consider how you might support someone else. Share the pause. Model the return. Extend the joy. Joyful Democracy isn't a place you reach. It's a way you move, and you are moving beautifully.